You may kill me, but you may never insult me. Who am I? I'm Captain Jack Sparrow.
Get the truth about movies on the movie show.
If he were telling the truth, he wouldn't have told us.
Tell them, Sparrow!
Unless, of course, he knew you wouldn't believe the truth, even if he told it.
Hello?
Joey, it's Ross. I need some help.
Help has come your way because you are listening to the movie show.
What is up?
Hello?
This is the movie show.
On Active FM.
On Active FM with Sash.
And Ryan.
And we decided that...
In case you were confused.
Yes. We would do a second show on Tenant. First of all, because Tenant is such an amazing movie that we needed to do a second show on it. But second of all, we are going to go into the timeline this time round of Tenant, because this movie, you watch it and it's a brilliant movie, but you don't actually know what was happening. So I had a few people ask me, like, what is with the storyline? And I realized I couldn't answer them. So then we decided to go on YouTube, because, you know, YouTube is a very nice place to find movie explanations, and watched a timeline review of the film. And then it, like, all fits in and made sense. And it was like, oh. So we thought that we would go through just some of the timeline aspects of the film. Please note, though, that this movie show has spoilers. So if you have not watched Tenant and you don't want to be the movie being spoiled for you, then first go watch the film. Or if you're one of those people that likes to know what's happening before they get into a movie, then you may continue listening. Otherwise, go watch Tenant, then come back and listen to the show, because you will be confused after watching it.
I recommend that you watch it the first time, that you listen to the show, and then you watch it the second time. Based on our previous show, I said I was going to watch it 10 times. I've watched it 1.5 times so far, according to date.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And it made a lot... The second time I watched it, because I'd watched the first one and I understood the storyline, now there's no more surprises, I know what's going on, I could sit and really just enforce my mind to the fact that, okay, they're going back in time. What? Why are they? And then, like, I was just like, okay, I get it while the story's going. Then I watched our clip from YouTube that explained the movie, because, guys, there's actually a lot of people that have really gotten into this film. So I searched Tenant Timeline on Google and I clicked on images, and there are hundreds of images that people have created of lines and dots and maps and stuff of the actual timeline. I was just like, wow, people are big fans of this movie, to the point that they've designed, like look at this one. It's even got the different character faces, the different events, like photos of the different events, and it's labeled, and it's so beautifully put together. It looks like a roadmap.
You do need a map, though, when watching this
film.
Because, yes, it's one of those where you're just like,
yeah,
what is going on? I'm so confused right now.
Yes, and there we have learned some shocking truths
we have
didn't realize in this movie, which makes so much sense now.
Yes. But just to start off with, I think the first thing we need to state, so this whole movie is on the inversion of time. Now, we then think time travel, but the way we know time travel is you go back in time, you do something, it alters the future, you come back, you know, like Back to the Future type of thing. Like, that is our standard time travel. But this film isn't like that. This film is all about time inversion, and it believes in predestination, which means you can't change what is going to happen. What is going to happen is going to happen, and there is no way that you can change that or alter that. The only thing that you can do with the inversion of time is you can watch time inverted. That's actually what it means. So, you know, we know the way we live through time is first comes cause, then comes effect. So, for example, if I move a pencil forward or touch a pencil, it's going to roll forward, right? So first I touch the pencil, then it rolls forward. Now, in this film, what they're able to do is they're able to invert time, that first they'll see the pencil roll and then they'll see me touch it. So it's another good example, which they do use in the film, is a gun, shooting a bullet. So the way we perceive time, when you shoot a bullet, first you shoot it and then it comes out of the gun and hits the target. Whereas with time inversion, the bullet comes out of the target and you actually are catching the bullet. But you can't change what is going to happen. So that's the whole basis of this film. So they're actually not inverting time to change the future. They're just inverting time to, like, cause events to happen and to also know the future. So obviously that's one of the big things that they used the time inversion for, was so that they could know. So if you look at Sator, who's the antagonist of the film, he actually has two teams, one going forward in time and one going backwards in time, and they communicate with each other so that each team knows what is going to happen. You also saw that at the last, you know, that the last part of the film where there's the two teams, the blue team and the red team. And then they go, the one team is 10 minutes behind and the other team is 10 minutes ahead. The one team is moving forward in time, so they're anticipating an explosion. The other team is moving backwards, so the explosion has happened and then they're moving backwards through time. And the reason they did that was actually so that the team moving forward can get information from the team moving backwards. So it's actually, that's all the whole time inversion is. It's not that they go in time to change the future, that they're not doing that. So it's time inversion. It is time travel, I suppose, because they're traveling backwards and forwards through time.
Yeah,
but it's not time travel in that they're going back to 1985, and yeah, it's not that. That's why they had to travel back in time to get to certain events. So, yeah, you know, like in Back to the Future, they put in the year, we're going to go back to 1963, and then, bah, we're in 19... That's not this film. This film, they invert time. So even at one point in the film, you see them traveling backwards, inverted, but they're traveling back to an event. And then obviously, yeah, that's... So it's just the whole way you perceive time is changed, which was crazy.
And of course, they cross each other quite a couple times because them moving forward person is still moving forward.
Yes.
The interesting thing that... what is the Russian dude's name?
Sator.
Serious? Mm-hmm. Is that even a Russian name?
No. There's...
Wow.
So there's five words in this film, right? So the word tenants, the actual word tenants is... originated from, it's actually called the Sator Square, and it's a word square containing five Latin words, but these words all you can invert. So on this, there's actual, and it comes from the ruins of Pompeii. So on this square, there's five words. The first one is Sator, the second one is Arepo, the third one is Tenants, the fourth one is Opera, and the fifth one is Rotus. Now, if you look, Sator inverted is Rotus. Arepo inverted is Opera, and then Tenant inverted is still Tenant. So there's actually this, it's a word square from Pompeii, it's a ruin with these five words on it, and Christopher Nolan actually used all of these five words within the film. So obviously the film's name is Tenant. The antagonist of the film is Sator. The whole film starts at an opera, and then the Arepo is... Rotus is the name of the security company, and Arepo is, I don't know if you remember, there was, so Sator's wife, Kat, she had an affair with someone who sold her a piece of art that actually wasn't genuine. It was, yes, a fake. That person, that's his surname, his name was Thomas Arepo. So they actually brought in those five words into the film, which actually just brought, it just added to the whole inversion of time.
Yeah.
With the whole inverted... Yes. Now, I feel like we should drop the bomb in the beginning, because that's going to make so much more sense. So, now, this is... no one's come out to say this is fact. This is theory, and a lot of people are speculating that this is what happened. But there are obviously people who are like, no, that's not what happened, just because it hasn't, like, no one's come out and said, yes, this is the case. So in the film, you have...
I think it makes so much sense.
It does make sense. So you have Robert Pattinson's character, okay? And he meets the protagonist, but you know that he's from the future. So it's the future self of him coming back, working with the protagonist. He knows exactly what is going to happen because he's from the future. So he's coming back to help out, but he's got all the knowledge of what is going to happen, and his character's name is Neil. Now, what they're saying is Robert Pattinson is actually the future version of Max, who is Sator's son, Kat's son, and he's the little boy in the story. So Kat wasn't able to see her son. It was Sator's hold over her that he controlled what she could do and when she could see her son. And they're saying that the son was actually Robert Pattinson. It's the same character. It's just the young version, the child version of him, and then the future version of him that comes into the film. And the, one of the things they also say is, so the son's name is Max, but it's short for Maxi. What was the full name?
Yeah,
Maximal or something like that. And then they say Maxine, if you
something to that effect. Yeah,
they say if you take the last part of his name and invert it, then you get Neil. Yes. So that the reason he did that was because if the father, Sater, found out that this guy was Max, he would have figured it out that is the future. Because obviously he knew the time inversion very, very well. So that's why he actually did it. But they say that Robert Pattinson's character is the child, Max, plus Neil, who's an older version of the child, who now comes back, not back from the future, comes back in time to help the protagonist complete the mission of saving the world.
Yes, and he hired him?
Yes, so the protagonist hired him in the future, and then he came back. Now, do you know, the protagonist didn't only hire Neil. So what they're saying is, the protagonist in the future actually put everyone in place. So you know Priya, the Indian woman? Remember at the end, he says to her, no, you're actually working for me. So a future version of the protagonist, because obviously the protagonist lived through all of it. But then in the future, he created Tennant, because Tennant was created in the future. And then he put Priya into position. So he hired Priya. He hired the guy on the boat. So I don't know if you remember in the beginning, when just after he's taken the suicide pill and survives, etc., etc., there's a guy on the boat that says, you've been hired by Tennant, which has been created in the future. So that guy was also hired by him. And then Michael Caine was also hired by him and was put into position so that the events could roll out properly.
How crazy to think about that. So he goes back in time, hires them, right?
No, he hires them in the future.
To go back or to...
to be in position when they were in position.
So in the future he hires them?
Yes. So it's his future self that hires him.
But do they go back now?
No, he hires them in the past.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yes.
Yeah, it's the future him that...
but it's the future him. It's not the present him, because the present him lives through the events of the film. Yeah. So you watch him live through the events of the film. Then in the future, he invents Tennant, because obviously, that's what happened, was he got hired by the future.
The question is, so the Russian dude.
Sater.
Yes, Sater. He was doing a very similar thing, because they would go forward in time. He was trying to steal the last artifact, and then he would go through it and he'd be like, okay, this, now he knows this, that this is gonna happen, go back in time, intersect, so he can get the artifact to go forward. I think that is similar to what the protagonist did.
Yes,
so he knew exactly, because in the opera house he was gonna get shot. That's why
Neil came
and intersected that part. Every time that there was a problem, Neil was there. Pretty crazy.
Other thing that's crazy is this whole movie is actually a loop. So it's the opera house. You start at the opera house. That's the beginning of the film, but it actually is also the end of the film. So I'll explain why. Then what happens is you move forward through time. And when the events of the opera house happened, you see when the protagonist went to Michael Caine's character, Michael Caine told him about this explosion that happened at Sater's home. And the fact that all of this had happened. But now Michael Caine's character knew that the protagonist had completed the mission and saved the world. Because if he hadn't completed the mission and saved the world actually would have ended already then. So when he was telling the protagonist what he needed to do, he was actually just setting the dominoes up so that the protagonist could then go and do everything that he needed to do and save the world. So that's why I'm saying the beginning of the film actually is also the end of the film. Everything, it's literally a loop. So the movie starts and then you watch events move. Then halfway through the film, I'd say the movie inverts, and then literally everything goes back to the beginning point. And that's where the movie ends. So they call it a temporal pincer. So the whole film, they're actually talking about this temporal pincer. But in the same way, the film is a temporal pincer. And also, the whole thing that they have is that the characters in the film, actually all they can do is view events. So it's not like they can change them. It's actually that it just depends on how they view the events. They either move it moving forward or they view it moving backwards. But they can't change, which is kind of like a film in a movie. You can't change the events. You can either watch them forward or you could put the movie on reverse and watch the movie in reverse. And literally, I promise you, I was watching one video where they took the Titanic. They took a scene from Titanic and they played it forward and then they played it backwards. And literally it was like, yep, that's Tenet, because it looks, that's what they did in Tenet. They just inversed everything. So yeah, there's parts of the film where you're watching time move forward and then there's other parts of the film where you're watching time move backwards.
So in other words, the furthest point in time that we actually get in this movie is there where they get to the, I don't know if it's like factories,
yes,
where they get there where the guns are on, like, yes, like a warehouse.
Yes, that's where Kat gets shot. The furthest, yes,
yeah.
From that point, you start moving, you move backwards in time.
All the way back to the beginning.
It is.
Yeah.
And then the other crazy part about inversion is that you can invert yourself, meaning that there can be more than one version of you at a specific point. So if you look in the beginning of the film, there were actually five versions of Neil at that point in time. So the first version is him as a child, because he was a child at that point. The second one was him at the opera house. The third one was him at Sator's home. What was it called? Something 12, Stark's 12 or something like that. But at that point, he was moving backwards and forwards in time because, yeah, there was different. So literally, there was multiple versions of him at the same time, but he was in different locations.
Yeah.
And that's why he was able to save the protagonist at the opera house. That's why he was able to save the protagonist when the explosion went off, plus et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's actually what's happening. You even see it with Kat. When she kills Sator, she's there as the future version of herself, but the past version of herself is there as well, and that's where she sees a woman jumping off the boat.
When she spoke about that, I was like, oh, okay. But then as it gets close, when I understood the whole movie, then when it got to her, I'm like, okay, so she actually successfully does do what she had to do, because the other
version, the older version of herself,
that part of her, in the future, past, whatever, that said that already has given clues that no, she's seen herself, but she didn't know it was herself. I think she also only clicked, oh, so I actually saw myself.
Yes, so she didn't know. She didn't know, but then obviously
she just saw his body and she saw herself.
And also at that point of the film, because remember, Sator shot her. So he thought she was dead. Then he inverted back in time, back to the boat, because that's where he wanted to die. Because when the explosion went off, that gave him the cue that the algorithm's been buried, so the future can find it, which means the world is going to end. So he's going to kill himself now. So that was his plan. So he thought that version of Kat wasn't the future version of her. He thought that was the current version of her. That's why when she revealed her scar to him, he then clicked.
Yep, that was it.
This is her. Because he thought she died. He didn't actually know that she had survived the gunshot. So it's like, it's crazy.
But let's talk about that. He shoots her, right? And then he takes her outside.
Time's inverted.
Yes.
So she was actually shot by an inverted bullet.
But he left her there in the car. I think he just assumed that she was going to crash. Because remember, she left in the car going backwards. And then
she hadn't been shot yet, though.
Yeah. So
because remember, when he shot her, he then left, right?
Yes.
To go and get the algorithm.
Okay, there you go.
And then John David Washington's character came and they still picked her up, and that's where they got her body. And then obviously they kept on going inverted through time to get back to the Oslo Freeport. Yes.
Yeah, but it's weird because there was an assumption on his side.
Yes, that she was dead.
That she was going to die. So I was,
but also they were saying to be shot by an inverted bullet is not,
because it does the damage, but without the, I was trying to get my head around that, because obviously, I think the damage remains in your body, but the bullets, you know, there's no holes or no, so in other words, you basically have like eternal bleeding type of thing.
Basically, yes.
Somewhere deep down in there, there's a problem or type of thing. Maybe it's some physics, yeah, some weird physics thing.
So to give the timeline simply, you start the movie off at the Opera House, which is actually when the explosion that happens at the end of the movie happens, right? So you start at the Opera House, then John David Washington's character gets captured. He tries to commit suicide, but doesn't. He just gets forced into an induced coma, and then he gets told, he gets hired for Tennant, which he's actually hired by himself from the future, but he doesn't realize that at that moment. Then he goes to where he meets Neil for the first time, but he doesn't know that Neil knows him. He just thinks Neil's an agent, etc., etc., which then he also meets Priya and gets set on the whole mission of going after Sata and getting the algorithm, etc., etc.
Do you remember in our first show I said I felt a little bit odd how he just sort of, he met people and he just sort of went along with
them.
There was no like suspicion because he's in the middle of an investigation here. Now we understand exactly why things just ran.
But also it's in Tennant, which is also one of the reasons they believe that Neil is the older, in fact, the older version of Max. Because in Tennant, you don't get close to the people you work with because it can affect, they said the whole thing of not knowing is actually, we use it to our advantage. That's why even when in the Freeport, where Neil runs after John David Washington, the protagonist, and sees it's him, he then leaves him and runs back, and then he doesn't tell him that, you know, you were fighting with yourself. He leaves it because, yeah, they don't want people to act differently because they know now. So that's the whole...
continue.
Yes.
Making the same decisions.
Yes.
With what they know.
So from Priya, they then go to the Freeport, which is where they crash the plane. They were basically trying to get that piece of art, which obviously they don't. Then they move forward to, after the Oslo Freeport, they move to the car chasing on the highway. And then they move to the secret base of plutonium. But then they then all move back in time. So they go back to the car chase, they go back to the Oslo Freeport, and then they move back to the explosion. And obviously Neil then goes back to the Opera House to make sure that the protagonist isn't shot. So literally the movie moves forward and then the movie moves backwards. But then you watch how the characters are moving forward, but then you also watch how the characters move backwards. Now, one of the back to the theory of Neil is Max, what they say is, so the protagonist, obviously he moves forward, he gets to the end where Neil dies and says, this is the start of a beautiful friendship for me, for you, it's only the beginning for you, but it's the end for me. What they believe then happens is the protagonist then goes, finds Kat and Max, and then obviously Max grows up knowing the protagonist. They have a very close bond, and then Max goes on to get into physics, etc., etc. Obviously, he finds out about his father. He gets hired by the protagonist, goes back into the past, and then that's where the story ends for him. But the reason they believe that Neil is, in fact, Max is because the first time Neil meets the protagonist, he tells him that he likes, was it Diet Coke? I think it was Diet Coke. And the reason what they're saying there is, none of the Tennant people get close to one another, which means he can't know that unless, in fact, him and the protagonist were close friends, which almost backs up that Neil is the older version of Max. So there's no definite. It's not like it came out that Max and Neil are the same person, but there is clues that people have picked up on and said, this is how it works.
Even if you look at Max's hair... that was on purposely done.
Yeah.
I think you don't see the kid's face.
No, you don't really see the kid's face.
You just see this long hair.
Which matches
exactly what Neil's looks like as well.
And the fact that the name, the inverted name is Neil, for me I'm like, that does give it away.
And especially the fact that Sato wants to take the kid away. So there's almost like this like very close fine line on the of this whole, because obviously Neil, you can say, is like the hero in this movie.
Yeah. His character is actually very, very...
Very, yeah.
It makes sense for him to be Max. It just makes sense. It ties up all loose ends. That's what it does. Because otherwise it's just this guy that came and died.
Can't be, yeah.
And that's it.
Especially the tag, tag on the bag, yeah. When I watched it the The second time, I didn't realize the tag
at the opera house.
Yes, when I saw the tag, I was like,
I didn't pick that up the first time as well. But I suppose it's also because you're just starting the movie.
I think that was the first time.
You don't know what's going on. You're just like, huh? Then watching it the second time, I saw it. I was like, ah! Because I remember seeing it at the end of the film where he saves the protagonist and jumps in front of a bullet, etc., etc. Yeah. So just to give you some last facts about the film, do you know that when the coronavirus pandemic hit the US in spring 2020, the film score was roughly 80% finished? The only thing it really affected was an orchestral session that was scheduled for April. As a result, part of the soundtrack was completed by putting together individual recordings of the musicians in their homes.
That's cool.
Right? And then this was also crazy. I thought this blew my mind. So for most of Christopher Nolan's films, Hans Zimmer does the score. However, this time he didn't do the score. Instead, it was Ludwig Göransson, I think that's how you pronounce his surname. And he actually did the score for Black Panther in 2018. But this was crazy. Do you know that Ludwig incorporated Christopher Nolan's own breathing as a part of the soundtrack used around Sir Kenneth Branagh's villainous character? So whenever he came on, whenever Sator came on, it's Christopher Nolan breathing. The sound comes in. The sound was achieved by Nolan breathing heavily into a microphone, and the composer then manipulated that into uncomfortable and raspy sounds. But that is actually Nolan's breathing. I thought that was very cool.
This is like art, eh?
Right? Like everything, like the detail that went in. It's crazy.
I'd like to watch an interview with Christopher Nolan.
Christopher Nolan.
I'm sure he's like extremely detailed and very like specific.
But Ryan, it's not even a joke about watching this movie 10 times, because do you know that after being offered the lead role, John David Washington read the screenplay in director Christopher Nolan's locked office at Warner Brothers Studios, which we know they kept it very high. The secrecy was very high. So the only two people that read the full script was Robert Pattinson and John David Washington. Not even Michael Caine got to read the whole script. He only got to read his part of the script. But do you know that it took John David Washington 5 hours to finish reading it because he kept flipping back and forth in pure amazement? And he had the script. Do you get what I'm saying? He had the script in front of him. That's like the blueprint of the story. And yet it took him 5 hours to read through the script. And he was like in pure amazement. But it wouldn't be a bad idea to actually go and watch this film 10 times because... yeah, if it takes the actor 5 hours to read through, then you know. Also, they say that Kenneth Branagh also, he was like every day, he literally had to, he had to read the screenplay more times than any other film he's worked on. And he said that every day he felt like he was navigating through the Times crossword puzzle when filming. So every day he'd obviously look at the scenes that they were going to be filming for that day, but he literally felt like he had to sit and figure out what was going on, where he was, which version of him. Because this film, there's actually different versions of the characters at different points. This film is crazy. The timeline is crazy. But Christopher Nolan's known for doing this. He loves playing with timelines. If you look at Inception, he played with timelines. If you look at the movie called The Prestige, I don't think you've watched that, but that one, he played with the timeline in order of showing you. So you were watching the beginning, the middle, and the end of the film all at the same time. Literally, that's what you were doing. He put them in positions where you were at halfway through the film, you're like, I don't know what's happening. I'm so confused. And then at the end of the film, you're like, oh! He did a similar thing in Dunkirk where you were watching three different points of the story at the same time. And then this one was crazy. This one, he just inverted everything. And yes, so I would highly suggest that you go and watch Tenet more than once, because otherwise you're not going to get the film, the full concept of the story.
I think this will be the first time I can actually watch it with someone and they're like, what the hell's going on? And I'll be like, okay, I'll explain. Pause. Oh, well, so what's happening is, oh, okay, all right, so play.
Then 2 seconds later, wait, I don't understand what's happening.
Yep.
Stop. Okay, so what happened now is...
because I was just like, the first time I was watching it, it's like, what's going on? I'm like, I don't know. I'm not sure either. And I remember I never understood it until the furthest point in time that they got there when they crossed it. And especially when you saw them in the mirror, not in the mirror, those two like separate passageways.
They called them, what did they call them now? It was where they were able to invert themselves.
Turntables.
Yes, the turntables, yeah. Yes. Yes. So that was, and I loved how they incorporated the red and the blue. So red was you moving forward through time, and blue is you moving backwards through time. And the way they, even in the turntables, that light, the red and blue, it was brilliant. Everything was really, really brilliant. But I think for me, what was funny was I'd watched it two times. I'd done a movie show on it, and I was asked what explained the storyline, and I actually was like, I don't know. So then that's what caused me to go and watch a YouTube video.
They have to save the world.
They're actually saying they're saving the world from the future, because the future wants to destroy the past, because they're saying the past was setting up. So they used like global warming and all of that, saying that the future was affected by the past. So they wanted to destroy the past so that the future wasn't affected by the past. So it was the past saving themselves from the future. That's actually what happened.
Sure. Can I have another strong cup of coffee, please?
This movie is intense.
Yeah.
But I just love that this movie's a loop. You start at the end of the film, actually. Then you go forward, and then you go back again. And then everything makes sense at the end.
I think I'm going to watch The Prestige. There's actually two movies here. I'm looking at all of Christopher Nolan's movies.
Yeah.
I want to watch... where's this Inception? I want to watch Inception fully.
Watched it fully.
I've watched parts of it. I was sort of like, I saw them jumping between different things. I was just like, okay, I'm going to watch Inception and I'm going to watch The Prestige.
The Prestige. Yes. This film by far, though, is the most time-warping film out of all three of them. So I've watched Inception. Obviously, Inception ends on the whole thing of you don't know if he's still in the dream or if he's in reality. That's how Inception ends. The Prestige makes sense by the end of it. You're like, oh, okay. This one, you can watch it and not know what went on. You just thought it was a brilliant film. But you're like...
There's a film here with Johnny Depp in it.
For real?
Transcendence.
Oh, Transcendence, yes.
Like all his movies look... Transcendence, Insomnia.
He plays on time. It's a thing for Christopher Nolan.
Oh, Memento.
You see?
Sure.
No, but I definitely think this is a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant film. The thought in this film is amazing. This is not a one-time watching movie.
And you said it was a film that was basically in writing.
Well, it was in Christopher Nolan's head for like 20 years.
Can you believe it?
This is what happens, people, when you think on a movie for 20 years.
I was listening to a podcast and a guy asked the question... where do you get your ideas from, inspiration? And it's weird. A lot of people can't answer. A lot of people who are very creative and ongoing, they can't answer that question. They're always like, okay, next question, please, because people always have ideas. And like, I know that if you know this guy, Andrew Price, he said, the one thing that he said was that a lot of people get ideas off other projects.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're busy with something. You're like, okay, this is cool. Wow, what if this and that? Yeah, okay, let me put that aside. I'm going to do that. And I think if you look at all his movies, I think Tenet is something that's like little crumbs from all the other movies, sort of get something together, you know. Okay, but this time I want to do this. This time I'm going to change it like this. So it definitely, you can tell it was definitely a well thought. You know, now that we're looking at the whole puzzle put together, you're sort of like, okay, yeah, no, cool. But when you, like in the beginning, you're like, who thinks of this stuff, you know, type of thing. So
it's like someone's brain exploded and then a movie was made. That's literally what happened. We also mentioned last week that Christopher Nolan is not a fan of CGI. Do you know that this film contains only 280 visual effect shots, which is less than most romantic comedies?
280?
But the amount of visual effects in this film is less than most modern romantic comedies. And how much visual effects is in romantic comedies?
I'm shocked. Well, it's a lot of probably set replacements and stuff like that. I'm shocked that there's even 280 in there.
But it said this is also low for director Christopher Nolan himself. The Dark Knight in 2008 had 650 visually effect shots. The Dark Knight Rises in 2012 had 450. Inception had 500. Dunkirk contained 429. So this film only had 280. So it literally halved all the other films.
I'm sure it's just like set explosion, set extensions.
Yes.
So most probably that building doesn't look good. Can we remove it type of thing? And most probably you'll find like, I don't know, were there gunshots in here? No, but although they've got those guns that shoot the flares off. Yeah. Do you think?
It could have been bullets. It could have been.
Do you think, you know what it is? It's doubling when they had to double themselves. That's probably.
Yes.
Unless they had a stunt double. You know, you see the back of a head type of thing. But there were certain shots where they're now in the inverted time. And like he sees himself and there he sees himself.
Yeah.
It's like this like zoom. And then there he's in the car close up of him looking. So it's probably like, yeah, double.
Stuff like
and
that.
Stuff
yeah.
like that. That's all it is. Yeah.
Yeah. But this movie is crazy. By far the best movie ever. I'm still stand to that.
Definitely.
Yes. I look forward to a movie topping it because that's going to be a very good movie. But for now, yes. Tenet made it best film ever.
I think if anybody, any other film, yeah, after, oh, you got to see this film. It's so brilliant, so good. Okay, let me watch it. You watch it, you're like, yeah, that was, yeah.
No, this film, that doesn't happen.
Couldn't you do better? Well, can you do better? Yeah, Tenet, watch it.
Yes.
There you go.
Yeah. So definitely go and watch Tenet. If you've watched it, go watch it again. If you haven't watched it, wow, you actually listened to the show and you haven't watched Tenet, you are a gangster person. But now you'll watch it with understanding.
You could watch it and I'm telling you now, even with the spoilers.
Yeah. You'll still be shocked.
Watch this movie knowing what you know. I'm telling you, you could watch this film and actually enjoy it.
You'd
be like, oh wow, okay, sure. I didn't picture it like, oh wow, okay, yeah, that is cool.
Definitely. So go watch Tenet, and we will be going to watch Tenet as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've got another 8.5 times to watch the film.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So that we've got 10 Tenets. Yes.
That's right.
From the movie show, we are signing out. But before we sign out, don't forget to go check us out on social media. We are on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Parler Gab, and Reddit. You can just search for Active FM. We also have a WhatsApp number. You can find our WhatsApp number on our Instagram bio. And then you can listen to all of our amazing shows on our awesome website, www.activefm.co.za.
Yep, and on Google Podcast as well as Apple Podcast. Apple Podcast, come standard on your iPhone. Yay! For Google Podcast, you need to go look for the app. Also, quite an amazing app as well. You can also get us on Spotify. Yep, for the Spotify fans or subscribers, go look for Active FM. We are there. Subscribe, and then you'll get notifications during the lovely holidays because, you know, you're going to be so much busy splashing around, having fun, you know, going in inverted time. Imagine inverted time. Just imagine, ping, backwards. Yep.
Nah.
While you're in the bit of time, and then there you go. You're like, the next Active FM show. And also YouTube, yep, we are there too.
Mm-hmm.
Go search for us. We're on two channels. Yep, two channels. Why? Because we are too much.
We are too much.
On Active FM and as well as on Active TV and Active FM. Go check the playlist. We're all there. Mm-hmm. Plus, we have a whole lot of friends there on Active TV on the playlist. Go check our friends out. Yeah.
So this is The Movie Show
on Active FM
with Sash and Ryan.
Until
next time.
Cheers.
Peace out.
Active FM. Radio has never been better.